Well, the topic today, last week we kind of finished up the discussion of the purpose of marriage, but I think one thing I want to talk about today is marriage and honor. Yeah, I think a lot of times we think that if you just know the verses about marriage in the Bible, you're good, right? So just apply Ephesians 5, Song of Solomon, you know, just apply those, and everything will be just fine. But really, I think the entire Bible is a book about marriage, and that would include the one another commands, which we'll talk about a little bit. It kind of set the stage about marriage and honor. I came across this description of three kinds of marriages that I thought was kind of helpful, okay? The first one is the competitive marriage. In this marriage, both spouses are in competition with each other for superiority. Husbands and wives can be armed with a vast arsenal of weapons ranging from fists to words of silence. So, thinking about this, maybe you've seen this, over what do husbands and wives typically compete?
Power.
Power, okay. Elaborations are also good too. Like, how do you see that?
Who's in control of, like, disciplining the kids? Who's in control of what they do?
Uh-huh.
Money.
Okay.
Free time.
Yeah. Money, free time, agenda. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, what else do we see husbands and wives in competition over? Or how is that, how have you seen it expressed?
The career.
Yeah.
Especially maybe if they're both like pretty, one's a lawyer, one's a doctor.
Or one has, let's say, a career advancement opportunity, but requires moving. But moving will take one spouse away from their job. So yeah, I think that's good. Now what else? We might see couples in competition with each other.
If there's a situation where one has sinned against the other, something like adultery or something mm-hmm. like that, there can be a competition for the moral high ground in a relationship.
Yes.
Who's the more virtuous one?
Who's the more righteous in the relationship?
Who's the sufferer and who's the cause of suffering?
Yeah, that's perceptive. That's good. Other ways you might have seen it?
The respect of the kids and the love of the kids.
Yeah.
Who do they like better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think even like significance in the community, whatever that might be. Like, who's the most important person in the relationship? And kind of a desire to prove that I matter more to this family, to this church, to whatever than you do. Right? Now, in this kind of marriage, what are the respective goals of the husband and wife? What is their objective and why, right? What's driving this kind of marriage?
Competition,
okay.
Their own personal goals.
Personal goals, yep.
Their desire to win the argument.
Mm-hmm. Yep, their desire to win. Best the other?
It's the individual.
It's the individual, yeah. Yeah, that's good. We got a couple, there's some seats back there. We have a couple up here, sorry. Come on in. So what's the long-term prognosis of a competitive marriage?
I feel like it would be constant back and forth and just not in a good way.
Uh-huh. Constant back and forth, yeah.
Bitterness.
A lot of bitterness, why is that?
So if you're in competition against each other, one's always winning or losing, and so you're holding grudges, and there's a record of wrongs that you're keeping.
Uh-huh. Especially if, like, being more righteous than the other person is, like, your higher ground, right? Taking suffering, like, being married to a bad man makes you a righteous person. And I've seen cases where, let's say, the man gets saved, and that same person doesn't quite know what to do with losing the moral the high ground that they had for suffering, mm-hmm. right? It shows itself in all kinds of ways. I mean, what's the long-term prognosis of a competitive marriage?
Either the marriage will end or it's misery.
It'll end or be in misery, right?
I was going to say, there's kind of an irony here. The long-term prognosis is they both lose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, Becky.
This is often like those old couples who just bicker all the time.
Oh, yes.
And you're like, ah, how do you live like this? And they're just used to constantly, because they're always trying to. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. Nathan knows what you mean too. So. Yeah, so a lot of bickering, right? A lot of bickering, right? So yeah, I mean, it could be divorce, it could be just bickering, could be resentment, but it's always trying to one-up one another, right? Now, how can you tell if you are in, or how could somebody tell if they're in a competitive marriage?
If you're married.
Okay, that's a start.
To some degree.
I guess we are.
I think just how they respond to certain things.
Okay.
That's great.
Like,
you're going to be at some level.
Okay.
Not
sure.
Necessarily, you know, living in misery or contemplating divorce or constantly bickering, but because of the fall,
yeah,
the wife's desire is to control her husband.
Yeah.
And so the husband's tendency is to be, you know, lazy in the marriage or
mm-hmm.
not, you know, you're, whatever is going on, you're not going to totally meet each other's expectations.
Yeah.
So there's going to be
mm-hmm.
tension.
Yeah. Asha, what were you going
to
say?
I mean, I think it's just how they respond to certain things. Like if you're seeing that one is like dominating over the other
mm-hmm.
in certain like aspects of the marriage, I think that
mm-hmm.
could be one.
Okay.
Or if you're asking them just questions like, and they respond like harshly to it.
Okay.
You know, I think that could
they
show.
They don't take correction is not taken well.
Yeah.
That could be one, yeah.
In some ways I wonder like if it's not just a mild version like what Steve was talking about, but like seriously competitive, I wonder in some ways if it almost would be hard to identify in some ways, because sometimes couples that would be that way toward each other would tend to not be able to see their own faults and be prideful,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they might not say, oh yeah, I'm in a competitive marriage.
Yeah.
You know, like they might not even notice that that's the way they're interacting with the other person.
Yeah, okay.
And I think part of that's because they're more focused on them than the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really goes back to that individualistic nature of what can I do for me, or how is this person going to help me versus
yeah.
mm-hmm.
how can I help the other person.
Okay.
I think there's probably also a desire for isolation between the two of them. It's Proverbs that says, like, better to be on the corner of a housetop than in the house with a contentious woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think
yeah.
just how they want to spend their time
okay.
probably tells a lot about how close they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a spouse could take like a passive approach and just never feel like they could bring anything up without their spouse
okay.
just always
yeah.
wanting them.
Yeah, and that's going to bleed to the next category, but hold that thought. Other thoughts on how to deal somebody's in a competitive marriage?
If there's a, like after arguments or just even in general, there's some kind of scorekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
did I win that or did I lose that? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you always have to have the last word.
Yes. Big time. Other thoughts?
There can be this just lingering resentment. Like, let's say after you both argue and they're both just really upset with each other, and it doesn't even seem like this is clear victor.
Yeah.
It's not even the tendency to keep score. It's
yeah.
just that, dang it, I didn't get my way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would just add one more thing. Like, there's a deep conviction that the other person is lucky to have me. Right? She made out like a bandit, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? There's just that kind of disposition where I am the superior one, because I suffer at your hands, you know what I'm saying? Or whatever it is, there's a deep conviction that, why can't you see how wonderful I am and how lucky you are to have me, instead of the other way around? Okay, so that's a competitive marriage. And now we have another one where you have the dominant marriage, okay? In this marriage, there are clearly established roles. One spouse is dominant and always gets his or her way. The other spouse is always expected to yield to the dominant party. The winner always wins, the loser always loses. So, Liam, that's kind of what we were talking about with you a little bit earlier on. So your thoughts will be appreciated here. So why might a dominant marriage appear to work well?
Clear leadership.
Clear leadership, right? Especially if the husband's leading, right? Why else might it appear to work well?
Well, with those clearly established roles and mm-hmm. one always being expected to yield, there's, if that's established, right, there's not much room for argument. So,
yep.
So you, one, even in that marriage, might be tempted to say, oh, yeah, we have a good marriage. We never argue.
Yeah, there's no power struggle.
No.
Okay, that's good. What else? How else might it seem to be a harmonious marriage?
Decisions are easily made.
Mm-hmm. Decisions are, yeah. They say a benevolent dictator is the most efficient form of government, right? So what motivates each party, and what does each hope to gain from the arrangement?
For the one who's domineering, it's about to get their way.
Mm-hmm.
It's still more individualistic in nature. But on the other person, it's about pleasing the person who's domineering.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, and that's where it's, but that's where it's still like the winner always wins, the loser always loses.
Mm-hmm.
So then the person who's domineering is getting their way,
mm-hmm.
and the person who's not is just like, well, I kind of win, but
mm-hmm.
because they're getting their way, but in reality they lose.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They don't ever get to be heard.
Yeah. That's good. Other thoughts?
I think when in situations where the wife is the domineering one,
mm-hmm.
I've seen it where she wants the power of being the leader,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't want to have to take responsibility when things go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When things go wrong, she can just point fingers to her passive husband and say, well, that's because he won't.
Yeah.
That happened because he won't. But when things go well, she takes it credit for it.
Okay. Yeah.
And that I'm sure that could work.
Yeah, and actually, dominant marriages do go both ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do go both ways. Okay, what are some other things that kind of motivates each party? I mean, I think it's obvious what the dominant person wants, right? Power and everything.
Sense of control.
But why would the losing party, what motivates the losing party? I'm more curious to get your insights about that.
Stability.
Stability? Okay.
Somebody's, they're always going to be there.
Okay.
You're stable because it's an intact marriage.
It's
mm-hmm.
intact.
I think also depending on like the person to avoid conflict, because
mm-hmm.
maybe they just don't want like conflict or a problem, and also just depending on the relationship in general, if it's any sort of abusive, they're going to avoid conflict at all costs.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, like if there's kids in the household,
mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
and they don't want to see their kids fighting, like
yep.
see, you know, they don't want their kids to see them fighting,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be a lot more passive.
Okay. Yeah, somebody else was going to say something around here. Is that you? Okay. Other reasons why the losing party is, we'll just say, happy to lose, willing to lose. Yeah, Chris?
Less responsibility. If one party is always in control and always doing everything, always winning the argument, when something inevitably does go wrong, party B has not my fault, I didn't do anything,
okay.
You wouldn't let me help.
All right, that's good. Becky, were you going to say something?
Yeah, in the male-dominant marriage, a lot of times there is just fear. Like, he rules by fear.
Yeah.
And either fear of, you know, physical explosions or verbal explosions, or fear because he's gaslit her to the point that she doesn't think she could make it without him. She does think,
yeah,
I'm a drag on him. I am lucky to have him. All these other women want him.
Yeah. First use of gaslit. You guys know what gaslighting is? I gotta actually watch the movie Gaslight. Fascinating movie.
You didn't watch that.
Huh? What do you mean? Pastor point for you, my friend. Well played. Yeah, but it's just a real fascinating movie of a guy who just basically tries to drive his wife crazy by talking about how you're forgetting things, you don't know where things are, and just a perpetual diminishment of her to kind of bend her to the will. But yeah, so super interesting movie. If you guys want to watch an old movie that's really well done, it was high drama. Yeah, other thoughts?
I think a lot of times, and I've seen it in church or like a Christian marriage or churches, there's a misunderstanding on the spouse side or the wife's side on what submission is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you have a domineering,
yeah,
husband, and she's just, well, I'm just supposed to submit.
Right.
Yeah. So that is like taking a theological truth and twisting it. Now, let's talk a little bit about why would a Christian husband take the losing position? What would drive him?
Pleasing his wife.
Okay, pleasing his wife. Uh-huh. Why would?
I feel like a lot of the things that we said about the woman taking the losing side could also apply to the male. So, like, for instance, being passive because he also doesn't want conflict as well.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People pleasing.
But maybe because he, I don't know, I'm trying to think of, like, how society would look at it now, like, our world. Maybe because, like, oh, I have a woman that's, like, the breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was thinking that it could be, like, him thinking that's his way of loving her.
Okay. So you guys hear the term servant leadership?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a servant leader in the home. So, and the emphasis on service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why else might he be feeling like this is the right thing to do?
Maybe he just wants to be taken care of?
Could be. Yeah, maybe she's a primary breadwinner and he kind of like sees that.
It's easier?
Yeah, to be passive and checked out.
Maybe he had a very domineering father and saw what it did to his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't,
yeah,
want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of a response against his past. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, in this day and age, you know, the new kind of masculinity is weird. Now I'm enlightened, I'm going to let women, right?
I mean, it could be careers, like,
yeah,
you could just have a higher,
yeah,
job.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no?
He could be, feel like he's a failure in society's eyes or moral failure. My wife is
she's more talented.
Yeah,
she's a better leader between the two. Yeah, and I'd say this, one of the reasons why a lot of men struggle to lead is because of personal sin. So if he's looking at pornography or something like that, or he has, he can always feel like, I've disqualified myself from this. I'm not worthy to lead this relationship. And she is more righteous than I because this is not her struggle. Does that make sense? So all this to say, there's all kinds of reasons why both sides can regress to this level. And, you know, I think sometimes, like a woman in that case, if a man's passive, she feels like she has to step up, otherwise what's going to happen to the family? Right? So a lot of times people, I think, they don't set out to have this kind of marriage, but because of the peace in the marriage, can mask a lot of things, right? But what's the long-term prognosis for this marriage?
Decision fatigue of the dominant one.
Yeah. There's a heavy... And I would say, especially if it's the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because usually with the women, mothers are better mothers than men. You know what I'm saying? And it, men kind of filling that nurturing role is... They just don't, in general, don't do as good of a job. So if she has to do that, be the breadwinner, do all those things, I mean, it's It's a lot. It's a heavy burden. Are you going to say something else?
I always have things to say, Dave.
Yeah, go ahead. You clipped your hair so well. I want to hear you speak.
I think just it's the weakening of the whole, because you have one side who's not allowed to express and use their God-given, I mean, their image of God and all the strength that he's put into that person. Mm-hmm. And so you're basically chopping off half of your strength
mm-hmm.
as a couple mm-hmm. so that the one can always have primacy.
Yeah.
So you have the one who's underdeveloped, and but the whole, the couple itself is going to be half as strong.
Yeah. Great answer, by the way.
Thanks, Bill.
Very little intimacy over the long term. They're not going to go closer. Because if somebody's always expressing and the other one's never expressing, the one that's never expressing is not really sharing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not giving the other, or the other maybe isn't giving them the opportunity to be vulnerable with them.
Yeah.
Truly, the domineering one isn't truly being vulnerable. They're just being domineering. So it's,
yeah.
They don't have intimacy at all. They're not going to
go
closer.
Yeah, that's a really insightful point. I mean, if you're always saying what you think the other person wants to hear, you're not revealing your soul. Yeah. What else might you see?
I think sometimes this is one that just goes to the grave with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just,
mm-hmm.
one just stays quiet, the whole marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think we'd all, you know, state the obvious. This is a recipe for abuse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can somebody tell, or how can you tell if you're in a dominant marriage?
I think by looking at the dominant, like, person in the relationship. So, like, for instance, if the male is being, if the guy's being the dominant one in the relationship, and you can tell from the wife's side being like, well, why don't you come out with, like, us girls, we're going to do a Bible study or something like that. And just by her response being like, oh, no, I really can't, like, he wouldn't like that. If it's he wouldn't like that, like the husband wouldn't like that, or any kind of thing like that, that could show, especially
mm-hmm.
if it's abuse.
Like
yeah.
Closed off.
Yeah, like closed off.
Mm-hmm.
Or what is it called? What's that? I learned in psychology, like battered woman syndrome.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that's good. Other thoughts?
Maybe how much the domineering one lets the other one speak in public,
mm-hmm.
how that kind of interacts.
Mm-hmm.
They're always speaking for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, you can detect it. Yes, Deborah?
If the one of the spouses feels like inferior to the other, maybe, like,
mm-hmm.
or like they don't feel like, like it's not. Like, I'm not even
going to
be heard in the conversation, so why
would I? Okay. Yeah, there's no pushback from one to the other. Okay, otherwise you might recognize it. What about, like, from the perspective of the well-intentioned dominant party? Because sometimes a dominant party is not necessarily there for, it's just maybe the way they're raised, they think it's spiritual leadership. But how could a well-intentioned dominant party detect himself or herself being this?
And you feel like there's a lot of pressure. You have to make every decision by yourself, or
yeah,
like you have to.
Yeah, maybe they feel the decision fatigue.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think even when the dominant one is benevolent, it inevitably leads to insecurity on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in parent-child relationships too. If you have a dominant, overprotective parent,
mm-hmm.
it can lead to insecurity on the child side, because if I don't have my parent there, my parent can't help me make these decisions and whatnot. I always have to. So I guess for the, even if the domineering one is benevolent, I'll just use the husband and wife. Like, can my wife make decisions
mm-hmm.
without my input?
Yeah.
Or does she feel like, does my wife ask me for help for things that she shouldn't need help for?
Okay.
So
yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, I think, did you guys hear that? like when she doesn't feel like she can make her own decisions, she asks your input for stuff that really shouldn't be necessary. That might be a sign that you've been overleading, right? Okay, other thoughts? Yeah.
Just the, I like in the description it says the winner always wins and the loser always loses it. It implies that their wills are always against each other. So
mm-hmm.
if I win, that automatically means that they lose, and
uh-huh.
vice versa. So it's really one indicator is that there's no oneness. Because if there's oneness, then when one wins, the other is, you can't win without both. You can't,
yeah.
you can only have a win-win or a lose-lose because
yeah.
you're united in things.
Yeah.
So if you have a dominant marriage where one can feel like they've won and one can feel like they've totally lost, then that's clearly a sign because
yeah.
it, there's not, you're not really, you're still two separate individuals where I can have a win, I can have a
yeah.
lose. But if you're one, then you can't really win if your spouse loses.
Yeah. I think another thing is if I have three children at home when you only have two. Right? Where in a dominant marriage, the other party is diminished to the status of child. In your eyes. See what I'm saying? You're not peer anymore. So you don't respect them as a peer, as a fellow adult. You know, they're like another child to you.
I think practically speaking, since the question is how can you tell, one of the things we often do is we'll ask either husband or wife, when was the last time your spouse was able to correct you? Or when was the last time you lost an argument? And if you can't think of both of those off the top of your head quickly, then you're
yeah.
the dominant spouse.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this happens all the time. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And should. Like, we should both ways be giving and receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So, yeah, that's just... Practically speaking, if you can't think quickly of the last time your spouse was able to correct you, there's a good chance you're dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Either
yeah.
because they're not trying anymore, like they've just given up,
mm-hmm.
or you don't take it.
Yeah. That's good.
I think, too, with that, with the passive party, they want to please, like they're wanting to please the other person, and
yeah.
so it's more important for them to please the other person than win the argument. So, like, they may have not necessarily agreed with the decision, but it's just easier for them not to argue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just keep the peace, right? So let's go to the lose-lose marriage, okay? The goal of this marriage is not personal victory, but the flourishing of the other party, even at cost to oneself. Though not perfect in this marriage, both parties strive to be the one to give the most dignity, strength, and esteem to the other. So what motivates each person in a lose-lose marriage? I got it. I've heard a bunch of things in one. Did you say something, Landon? No. Was that you? Okay.
Self-sacrifice.
Self-sacrifice.
I said pleasing the
other. Pleasing the other? No. Yeah, other thoughts on what motivates somebody in a lose-lose marriage?
Like lifting the other person up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think in our sinful nature, the only thing that would motivate us would be the love of the Lord and
yeah.
to glorify the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a few things, like, in a competitive marriage, it's like, it's your life for mine, right? In a lose-lose marriage, it's my life for yours. You know, to have a lose-lose marriage requires both parties to have, let's say, humility, right? You know, a very low view of themselves and a very high view of the other. And then just understanding that that marriage is not about you, it's about the glory of the Lord and lifting up your spouse, right? So what's the long-term prognosis of this marriage? I mean, state the obvious. Noah, what do you say?
Usually they're happy and they are married for a long time.
Yeah.
And then when they're older, they look back at the marriage with like a fondness, not a regret.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I think it's kind of self-evident, right? If you deny yourself, he who loses his life will save it, and he who saves his life will lose it, right? It's, you have this self-denial, humbling yourself, exalting the other person. Really, it's about a marriage devoted to honoring one another. Or the goal of marriage is honor the Lord by honoring the other person, right? A foolish woman tears down her own house, right? You know, but a wise husband and a wise wife, they look to build up the other person, to strengthen the other person, because they're on the same team, right? They're on the same team. So in lesson one, we learned about the purpose of marriage is to glorify God. Our own sin makes this quest difficult as we continually seek to exalt and elevate ourselves in the place of God. There is no relationship where this is more apparent than a marriage. In this lesson, we will see that the key to having a God-glorifying marriage is for each partner to continually repent of their own thirst for glory and seek the honor of the other instead. So we're going to look at some of these commands to honor. And again, the Bible is a marriage book, right? So commands about forgiveness and love and serving one another all apply to marriage in a significant way. So we're going to look at Romans 12:10. And a little background. Context: Romans is an intensely theological book written to help Jewish and Gentile Christians in Rome to live at peace with one another. Paul starts by rehearsing the work of God in their lives to make them one with him, sending his son to suffer and die so that the Jews and Gentiles alike can be redeemed from the bondage of sin. Now in chapter 12, Paul begins to transition from the indicative, what is true of us, to the imperative, what we are to do in response. Now that he has described our great salvation, he gives instructions for how we must live out our salvation with lives worthy of God. This includes a life of self-sacrifice and love, including the command of Romans 12:10. Somebody want to read that for me? Ben, you got that?
Sure thing. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another.
Okay. The version I have is love one another with brotherly affection, outdo one another in showing honor. So what is honor? What does it mean to show honor?
Or to hold something with a high view.
Holding something with a high view, okay? Yeah,
to treasure something or give it great value.
Okay, to give it great value. Yeah. I mean, what does it mean to show honor?
To praise him.
Praise him, yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes to serve or sacrifice for something.
Okay.
If there is a person who you deem has great honor,
mm-hmm.
you will humble yourself.
You'll humble yourself?
Because when we humble ourselves, we exalt God.
Yeah.
And if you want to show someone honor, you humble yourself, which then exalts them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, how else might you show honor? Or just what are some maybe everyday ways we might show honor?
In conversations with others, when you're, the way that you talk about your spouse to those people.
Yeah.
Is in an honoring way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about, let's say a guy asks a girl out on a date and he shows up to pick her up and it is very clear that he just finished his intramural basketball game because he's still wearing his intramural basketball uniform and he's drenched with sweat. Okay? How would the woman feel at that moment? You have clear opinions.
All right
here, right? Single ladies, help me out here. How would you feel at that moment? Ashton, you can count.
I feel like he wouldn't care about the date, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, oh, taking her out, you know.
Not willing to put in the effort.
Yeah.
Let's hear the perspective of a Ukrainian. Go ahead, Lisa.
Like,
this is going
to
be good.
I'm thinking about the other person, like, that
yeah.
she has to smell all that.
Yeah.
To go on a date.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it kind of sends a message, right? You don't matter that much. You're lucky to have me, right? And I'm going to just make a commentary here, okay? Why are mullets so popular?
They're not. They're really
not. You know what it says? I'm so good looking, I can have this haircut, and you still want me.
Yeah.
It's dishonor. And I'm going to grow a creeper stash to go with the mullet. I am so irresistible, I have to handicap myself. You know, right? It's not honoring, right? Bad haircuts are not honoring, so that's just not. Any mullets in here? Okay. Okay. Well, I would have shamed you appropriately, just letting you know. So show reverence. So what does it look like to outdo one another in showing honor? How does this command contrast with the usual way people relate to each other? Right, it's interesting. It says outdo one another in showing honor.
It's a competition not against each other, but for each other.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting, it's ironic, isn't it? Why is it so ironic? Yeah, Chris.
Because our fallen nature always wants to serve ourselves.
Yeah.
So you're intentionally not serving yourself and for someone else.
Yeah. Like when somebody's competitive, what's their drive?
Power
to win, right? So in this case, how can you be competitive with showing honor? What's the drive? You want them to win. And then to feel like the winner. The more valuable one, right? So why is it important to God that we show honor to other people as opposed to receiving honor from others? Scott, what say you? You are deep in Scott thought.
Yeah, deep in contemplation. I think there's a sense in which, like when you think about that outdoing one another, can mean to lead onward by example, to go before. There's a certain proactivity that God is the initiator that seeks us out, that loves us. And so when we think about, you know, loving others, we are to be the one that is not waiting for them to love us, but initiating and leading and going before and trying to outdo them.
Uh-huh.
Almost like a race. You're racing to see who can be the most out loving and honoring. And
yeah.
They're getting ahead of you. Oh, I'm going to be even more honoring of you. And,
yeah.
It's just, and I think we see it often in reverse, that the more we are, the more we sin against one another, the easier it is to sin back to the other. We
yeah.
often follow each other's example.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much more challenging to continue to sin against someone who's outdoing themselves.
Yeah, so what are some practical ways to show honor to one another? In contrast, what are some ways we dishonor people? So what are just some practical ways of showing honor to you?
I have one that, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but if you sit in a conversation where, in the workplace, where you have lots of married people, but usually they're not working there with their spouse, often there's this habit that people have of just running down, and that their favorite funny story is what's wrong with their spouse, or what their spouse did that was so dumb or so stupid, or what I can't stand about my spouse. So that's basically the opposite. So you can really show honor by praising your spouse.
Now, why do people do that?
It drives me crazy. You know, it's like, would you say that if your spouse was right here? I mean, you're running them down in front of all these people.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's reflecting on you and on your spouse. And
how does it reflect on the person?
I mean, it shows that they don't honor, they don't
yeah.
respect their spouse.
Yeah.
I know that, and I've often thought, oh, if Carissa ever was to, you know, I would just be crushed. Like, it would just really
uh-huh.
damage. And I think same with
yeah.
her, if I was to run her down in public, just.
Yeah, I just kind of, I want to say, if they're so terrible, why did you marry them?
Yeah.
And you have the response is, I was duped! Well, okay, so you're a sucker, right?
Yeah. And it also says more about that person, too. If they're willing to gossip about their spouse, they're willing to gossip about other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just when people run down their spouse, it's like...
But on the positive, like, if you... Well, Carissa did this, and it was amazing, right?
Yes.
Show the praises for all of their amazing things. That's one way that you can show honor that's
For sure.
Distinct.
Yeah, good Scott thoughts. Thank you, Scott. We'll draw from this well later.
Yeah.
Other ways you can show honor?
Take a shower before a date.
You know, and there's truth to that, right?
It's funny that, like, your appearance, your dress, your grooming, really that's for other people. They're, everybody else is the one that has to look at you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, like, we're immune to our own body odor.
Yeah,
like I don't smell.
I don't have to look at myself all day, right? It's the people that are in running contact.
Yeah, my breath
with.
Goes this way, not this
yeah.
way, you know?
Yeah.
Just getting real.
Just
getting real.
Just trying to.
Little ways, like, giving them the best seat, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
go to a movie theater, right? There's the, you know, sit together, but one's a little bit better, right? Or on the plane, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
preferring them in those ways.
Yeah.
Yourself.
And it can be tricky because, like, we talk about leadership and preferring. Well, they, if it's like, where do we go to eat? What are we going to do tonight? Sometimes they might prefer that you lead and choose all those things and have them thoughtfully consider what they might enjoy and what they like, and
mm-hmm.
that might be one way to honor them is by saying, I've really thought about what we're going to do and what we might do and
mm-hmm.
planned out this whole thing. So there's ways you can prefer by keep putting thought and time into how you're going to.
Yeah, I
was going to say that I took this concept when Kenzie and I first got married as in any decision, defer to her. Do what she wants.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was, in a lot of ways, it was well-intended. I wanted to live with my wife in an understanding way and
uh-huh.
please her and serve her. But what I effectively did was I put her in the position of leader.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a decision that has to be made, I want you to make it
mm-hmm.
and do whatever you want to do. And I'll just go along with whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, along with what Scott said, like, what is showing honor to my wife is me taking the position that God has given me as a, I'll just use the term, as a servant leader, as a leader who uses his leadership position to serve those under his care for their best
mm-hmm.
interests,
mm-hmm.
Rather than putting that pressure
yeah.
on her shoulders. There's supposed to be.
And
yeah.
one of the greatest ways that shows the difference between those two a lot of times is if it turns out bad, right, you go into it knowing that it's my responsibility, right? You've listened, you've asked what in any decision, but you're like, okay, let's do that. I'm going to do that, but if it's wrong, it's on me. So that's I bear that responsibility.
And I think that also shows...
It's not like, well, you picked, either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like when a leader takes the initiative to make decisions that he knows his spouse will like,
mm-hmm.
he's showing forethought and care and concern for her by studying her, by knowing her, knowing what she would like beforehand, and then taking the initiative to make decisions that will be in her best
mm-hmm.
interest and desires.
Yeah, short term and long term.
Short term and long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Floyd.
I always found it was best just to ask. Mm-hmm. Over time, usually at breakfast, how can I best serve you today?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, simple things, just things I didn't think of.
Mm-hmm.
I spend 2 hours in the kitchen cooking your meals. Why don't you spend 20 minutes cleaning up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I spend 3 hours, you know, cleaning the house. Why don't you spend 20 minutes vacuuming?
Mm-hmm.
So we just started a routine where women cook, men clean.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to my house, you're going to get dirty hands.
Yeah.
But I usually had to ask her, ended up being married 45 years and we dated 4 years, so we got almost 50 years behind us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still amazed at the amount of selfishness that I can produce or the wife can produce, but it changes with every season.
Mm-hmm.
Our youngest now is 35, and so,
yeah,
you know, when your kids are gone, you got to just look at your wife and go, I haven't really seen much of her. She's spent most of the time taking care of the kids, and that's been most of the time at work.
Yeah.
But if you don't communicate well, I don't know how you figure out how to show honor. Unless someone tells you this is how you honor me.
Yeah. Kind of intrigued to hear the female perspective.
Yeah.
Of what to do or what helps. Becky, go ahead.
No, there's other females.
I think just showing interest in each other's lives, making it, I mean, again, it's just taking the focus off of yourself and asking them how they're doing, what they're interested in, what they're involved in, lifting them up, encouraging them to seek out the things that they are interested in.
Yeah, that's good.
Like, I think when our kids were little, you were hardly ever around. You were just gone all the time. And had to be, you were building a life for us. It was right. But I wanted our kids to think that you were like the rock star in our home. And so when I knew you should be coming home, it was like we'd line up at the window, we'd wait and watch.
I felt like the Beatles. JFK. It was awesome.
Yeah, because I wanted them to think that their dad is the coolest person in the world. And that's just a really easy way to show honor, but really practical.
Mm-hmm.
I think another thing is giving the spouse credit for their ideas when they go well.
Yeah.
Just making clear, you know, that input that you made, that was clutch. I was heading the wrong way, or I hadn't even thought about that. And like that's just giving honor for something.
Yeah.
Even in front of other people too. Like, you know what? My husband would probably have a good idea about that. He's really good with these things.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something I thought about too, is just freely giving credit to the other person. Like, how did your children turn out so well? Well, no, it was hard. Instead of deflecting it to, well, my spouse, I mean, she put a lot of work into it. This is the fruit of her labor. I was just happy to help, right?
Yeah,
so boasting in yourself is like the opposite of showing honor.
Yeah.
Because boasting is a solicitation. Like when somebody boasts, the expectation is, right on, dude, you are awesome. No, you know what I'm saying? You're trying to draw praise to yourself instead of giving praise to others. So showing honor is like boasting in others, not yourself. Go ahead, Scott, I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, that can be really important if you have one that's much more social and talkative and one that's more quiet, because oftentimes the quiet one will never take credit or praise for the things that they're contributing.
Yeah.
And so like Carissa might have several ideas and we execute and they like go great, but she'll never say, oh, that was my So it's important that you might be the only one that knows that they're contributing all this.
And I would say, especially like if you have a stay-at-home mom, like if you have a job outside the home, you have metrics to measure your success.
Mm-hmm.
Promotions, money, do you know what I'm saying? Like accomplishments at work, projects done.
Yeah.
I mean, a stay-at-home mom, what does she have to? The kids are alive.
Do
you know what I'm saying? It's harder to measure, and I think it's harder for other people to appreciate.
The flip side of,
did I get that right?
What Becky said is, you know, you're sitting around the dinner table, and you're leading that this is an amazing meal, or, you know, you're reflecting on, look at how good the house looks, and wow, you guys really learned a lot today. Your mom is doing a great job teaching, and you're just praising. Praising everything that she's
doing. So it's important, especially if somebody has a non-publicly esteemed position. You want to make sure that they are recognized. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I have a question. In a how does this work in a marriage that is unequally yoked? And especially when, like, this command is given to believers,
uh-huh.
and there's a mutual understanding that as two people people grow in spirit-led holiness that they will do this. So let's say you have one believer who's really trying to show honor, but honor is not being shown in return.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it in that kind of situation?
Anybody want to give it a shot?
You can't force the other person to show honor.
What was that?
You can't force the other person to show
honor. I think, one thing, read through the book of Nehemiah, something to watch for is how many times he says, "Remember me, Lord, for my good." The Jews are behaving badly. They're not heeding what he has to say. He's making all these sacrifices, and people aren't reciprocating. He just says, "Remember me, Lord, for my good."
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, I think, and that's what I would just tell the woman or the man, is like, the Lord sees that, and he'll honor you.
Yep.
And that has to be good enough.
If the husband's an unbeliever, but the wife's a believer, if she's showing him honor, and he's taking it and twisting it and using it in a wrong way for the family, for something that was negatively affecting, does the wife continue to show honor, or is it more loving for her to still show honor, but not to dishonor him, but to maybe back off on that?
So if you're so good with money, and he takes that as permission to go on his hunches for sports gambling. Right? Yeah, and I think you just have to talk directly. You honor, but then you confront. And I'd say the problem with that marriage is not that she's showing too much honor, it's that she's not telling him what he needs to hear. Because, I mean, for a marriage to work, I mean, there has to be confrontation either way, even if the person is an unbeliever.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelieving marriages have all kinds of confrontations. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
For the sake of the kids. So I would say, the solution is not to turn down the honor part, but to turn up the correction part. If you turn down the honor part and you turn up the correction part, what do you think is going to happen? Right? If you turn up the honor part and you kind of turn up the correction part, it's just easier to, take correction from somebody who you know loves and respects you. Otherwise, it almost becomes manipulation of honor.
And I think that really strikes at a chord, because we're called to honor, in a lot of different areas. And so it's almost always we're in a relationship where we're honoring someone who's not a believer. We're
honor the
to
king.
Honor the king,
yeah.
Right? Children, honor your parents. Like, you might have believing kids who come to faith and their parents aren't believers. Wives, unequal spouses. You might have bosses, obviously, that are unbelievers. And how do you honor them? And so it's ultimately in all those areas you're honoring the Lord mainly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, through that, that main point, like you said,
yeah.
Look to the Lord, and how is my behavior honoring him
yeah.
in this relationship?
Yeah. Well, just real quickly, why do many husbands and wives struggle with this command?
Because we're glory hogs,
right?
We want to receive honor, not give honor.
Yeah, I
want
to receive honor, and we think it's better to receive than to give, right? Well, we'll go ahead and pause there. Remember, if you come here next week at this time, you will be disappointed, because we're all going to be out there for our altar Sunday school. We're going to talk to some missionary friends of ours, so it'll be great. So I'll pray and I'll let you guys go. Well, Father, we are grateful for just the clear teaching of Scripture. I thank you for all the insight this class has provided, and I pray that this week will be one where we just seek to give praise, give credit, not only to you, but to other people, that we will be people who lift other people up, who show respect and honor, and that ultimately we do that because we understand that other people are a gift from you to us, and help us to cherish them as such. In Christ's name.